Okay, so should we start? Okay, so I'm going to talk about how we go about training methods in NLP for domain-specific applications, and also why we would need to do this in the first place. I'm going to be talking about English because that's the language that I work on personally, but I think a lot of these methods definitely are going to apply to pretty much every other language that NLP has ever touched, including French and historical French. So in this case here, a domain would be the difference between news, contemporary news texts, for example, and these historical texts that are in this journal from a century ago. Now, one of the things that we can see for the NLP pipeline in English over the past 2 years is that there's been an extraordinary burst of energy and making the accuracy for a lot of these different components in the NLP pipeline really just skyrocket. Partly due to new neural methods, new architectures, new computing resources. But if we look at the kind of tasks that we have in English, at least, and look at what kind of accuracy we have as being state of the art right now, right, as of this year and last year, we can see that there's some problems like tokenization that are essentially solved by construction because we define what a token is. We can deterministically say what that accuracy is. Parse speech tagging is now up to about 98% for English. NER is about 93.1. Syntactic parsing is up to about 95.1. And coreference resolution is the straggler of the bunch, but still showing really dramatic gains compared to where the state of the art was about 5 years ago. Now, one issue with all of this, though, is that all of these methods for all of these results on the state of the art are for not just news in particular, but for the 1989 Wall Street Journal. Right, so this is one of the dirty secrets of NLP, that a lot of our methods have really been optimized for this one very narrow domain in English as a result of the choices that we have made as a community for how we go about annotating resources and adding more layers on top of the same fundamental resource. So this is, again, due to decisions in the 1990s about building a tree bank of syntactic parsers for English overall that happened to be made on this data set. Now, over the past few years, there's been a widening of exposure to different domains in English, including Twitter, product reviews, other languages like French and Mandarin Chinese. But there's just this long tail, a long tail of domains and subdomains like the collected works of Mark Twain or these historical journals in French that we might want to have our methods perform well on. Now, the problem with this disparity of attention being given to specific domains in English and really for every other language in NLP is that when we take a model that's been trained on one domain and use it to test, you know, evaluate on another, we see really huge drops in performance. So if you haven't created data yourself yet for your specific domain, you may not know how stark this performance drop is, but it is really quite huge. So this here is a meta-analysis of a lot of different studies that have taken a model trained in one domain, applied it to another, and we can see what this performance impact looks like. So take a model for English part of speech tagging, train it on the Wall Street Journal, and evaluate it on the Wall Street Journal. We have an accuracy of 97%. Take that same model trained on news and use it to tag Shakespeare. We see the accuracy fall by about 16 points. All right, take a model trained on modern German part of speech, use it to tag contemporary modern German text. We again have an accuracy of 97%. Use that same model to tag early modern German text. The accuracy falls by about 30 points. All right, take a model trained for the Wall Street Journal in English, use it to tag middle English. We see the accuracy fall by about 40 points. Now, there's no reason at all why this model should work, because Middle English is nothing like contemporary English, but still people have tried, and we see them failing. Over and over again, we see this happening. Take a model trained on Italian news for parts of speech. Accuracy rate is 97%. Great. Uses a tag Dante. Accuracy falls by to 75. This is true for English part of speech from moving from the Wall Street Journal to Twitter. It's true for English NER moving from news to Twitter. It's true for parsing, so syntactic parsing, for phrase structure parsing, moving from the Wall Street Journal to medical text, moving from the Wall Street Journal to patent data, and moving from the Wall Street Journal to magazine data. Now, magazine data is not even that different from news, but we still see a huge drop in performance, right? For any of these kind of models where we take a model that's been trained on one domain and use it to tag another domain, you're going to see huge drops in performance. Now, there's a lot of ways that we can go about accounting for and really accommodating this kind of phenomenon. So One method is domain adaptation, right, where we take a model that's been trained on one domain and try to adapt it slightly to work on a target domain, right? A domain where we may not have as much data, but we still have enough data from a related domain that we think it's going to port semi-well. One problem with this is that many of the methods in domain adaptation tend to be more complex than humanists typically are comfortable with. And it often means that there has to be a computer scientist in the loop who is helping design models and train models for you. One area that has been really important for bridging this divide has been these more recent neural representations. So contextual word representations is one of the newest innovations in NLP over the past 2 years that has been really dramatic for a lot of performance improvements, where instead of having one representation for a word, we subtly tune that representation to how it's being used in the context of a specific sentence. That can be really great for porting across these different training regimes. But if what you care about is having performance be really good for a specific domain, one of the easiest things that you have control over, that you really have power over, is creating that data yourself. So I'll talk as a case study about some of the work that my group has done in annotating data for entities, events, and coreference that really has bridged this graph by making this model be tuned specifically for the domains that we care about. Now, before we get to this, I want to introduce or recover some of the points that Claire brought up for what named entity recognition is in the first place, because that really forms the basis for the models we'll be talking about later on. So again, NER is this problem that I think a lot of us are now familiar with over this day of talking, if we haven't been familiar with it before, of trying to identify spans of text that correspond to typed entities that are proper names. Right? Named entity recognition is those entities that are specifically named. Right? So if we have a sentence like Tim Cook is the CEO of Apple, this would mean pulling out Tim Cook as being a person and Apple here as being an organization as opposed to a fruit or some non-organization, some non-entity type. Now, there's a lot of ways in which we can go about carving out this conceptual space of what counts as being a category we care about for NER, right? So the classic example of this, the classic typology is designed by the ACE system from 2005, which breaks down the categories into people, organizations, locations, geopolitical entities, facilities, which include things that are built by humans, including bridges, buildings, and airports, and vehicles as well. I think in the original specification, weapons was also thrown in here because a lot of this work was optimized, again, for news text, I think even talking about Latin American terrorist incidents. So yes, again, the ways in which we can have these typologies be rooted in a design that was not necessarily the one that we care about. But there are other designs, right? In all these cases, you can choose what kind of categories you really care to label. So Genea is another example of a different named entity recognition typology that is really optimized for a very specific domain of biomedical text. Now, in this case here, Genea here has categories for not people, places, and organizations, but proteins, cell lines, cell types, DNA, and RNA. I don't know any of the difference between a cell line or a cell type or really any of these concepts, but the people who designed the system do, because that is what is relevant for this particular domain. We can also have much more fine-grained typology than just these top-level 5 or 10 categories. So fine-grained NER is one way of doing this, right? Taking some hierarchical structure as being the starting point where we care not to label just people, but also very specific instantiations like businessman, performer, musician, and so on. In all these cases, if there's training data to be had, either found naturally in Wikipedia, as in this work, or labeled by people, we have a means of training systems that can predict these in text. Now, I won't go into detail about how we go about training or what kinds of models the NER really is used in, but in all these cases, you can think about NER as being a problem of sequence labeling, that we're given a sequence of tokens, right, of words in the sentence, and we want to assign one label to each of those tokens. Right. Each one of those tokens gets one label about whether it corresponds to the beginning of a specific entity type, is inside the entity type, or exists outside of it. And the problem here is that we presume some access to training data, right? Where we have a set of inputs with n sequential time steps, right? N words in a sentence, and we want to predict one corresponding label for each of those individual tokens. Now, classically, the kinds of ways in which NER models have been trained has been very feature-rich, right? So we design a model where we design these features, like a word token that we want to predict the label for. We know its identity of that word, right? That word is Mr., and we think that there is going to be some association with Mr. and the label of person. Having the embeddings for that word is also important. Knowing a part of speech, if it's a verb or a noun or a proper noun, is important. The syntactic chunk type, if the presence of that word in a gazetteer, also is a very important feature historically for these kinds of models. And a gazetteer in this case is, as a lot of you know already, a list of names, right? Generally, these are names of places, like we see for geonames, the U.S. Social Security Administration for person gazetteers, the gate source of geographic place names, for art and architecture, if you care about specific art and architecture names. But more generally, these kind of gazetteers list names of any kind of type category, right? Any kind of word you think belongs to a specific category can be placed in a gazetteer that helps in these kind of trained models where we have them featureized in this way. The more contemporary way of designing these kind of systems that ends up having a much better performance and accuracy is to design a neural system that has a representation for words in the context of a sentence that are often optimized for their specific representation in that sentence that we then use to predict whether or not each of those words correspond to the specific label that we care about. So in all these cases, I love envisioning are outside of our named entity typology, so they get the label of O, while Rome here gets the label of the beginning of a location name. And exclamation point is, again, something that's outside. Now, in all these cases, these kind of neural models end up performing much better than feature-based discriminative models. So if you pay attention to one column here, you can look at that very last one, where the best model here, a bidirectional CNN conditional that has a conditional random field layer on top of it, has an F1 score of 91, where the traditional feature-based models tend to have F1 scores of about 87 for this kind of data. So these models tend to be much more improved compared to what's been going on over the past 5 years. Now, the kind of work we talked about for how we can design this data to be specifically optimized for a domain we care about, I'll use the example of literary text. So with literary entities, we know that there are a lot of entities that exist in literature that we may want to care about identifying. Now, most of the work in NLP focuses on named entity recognition in particular, right, where we specifically care about just those categories that are explicitly named. So in this case here from Austin's Emma, classic NER, flat named entity recognition, would identify Mr. Knightley and Isabella as being the only two names in this context. Well, we know that there are a lot of other names here, or a lot of other entities here that we might also want to be able to recognize. So that includes not just Mr. Knightley, but also a sensible man about 7 or 8 and 30, a very old and intimate friend of the family as being an entity that is comprised of people, Isabella, again, under name entity recognition, Isabella's husband, and the elder brother of Isabella's husband. Right? So these are all entities in the same set, but just don't happen to be named. Right? They still are entities that we may end up caring about. Now, once we abandon having named entities as being the criterion for what counts as a category here, we get automatically into a very complex kind of a structure that involves nesting. Right? So in this case here, the elder brother of Isabella's husband has three entities that are nested within each other. So Isabella is a part of Isabella's husband, which is a part of the elder brother of Isabella's husband. So in this case here, what we want to do is recognize those spans of text that correspond to categories of entities, whether they're named or not, and that have this specific hierarchical structure. Now, the way that we've gone about doing this is by annotating data ourselves. So we took a sample of 100 books from Project Gutenberg that have a mix of different types, high literary style, along with some popular pulp. We selected the first 2,000 words from each of these texts, and we gave them to annotators to annotate. Now, each one of these texts took about 20 minutes for a single person to annotate. We annotated 100 of them. So each person in the end ended up annotating for about 33 hours, right? Not a whole lot of annotation effort to get a data set that is 200,000 words big. Okay, so the kind of entity classes that we annotated here were, again, people. Now, in this case, not just the named ones, but generic ones like the boy or her daughters, organizations which include formal association like the army or the church, vehicles which include ships, trains, and carriages, right, even if they're not named, and also lots of different location categories, so including the classic geopolitical entities that are often used in a location-based NER, like New York. But in our case here, because we don't just care about named ones, we also have specific mentions like the village. Locations are those entities with physicality but without political status, so including New England, the South, or Mars, but also including natural settings like the country, the valley, or the forest. And also facilities. So facilities, again, are these units that have been built by people for habitation, like buildings, storage, like barns, transportation, like streets, and any maintained outdoor space, like a garden. Right? These are the lived places that we care about identifying here, because we've made a choice that these are the kinds of locations we want to model, and not the kind of locations we would get from a generic NER system. Okay. Now, in doing this, it means that we encountered a number of different annotation issues that we had to solve and solve ourselves and make decisions about ourselves. And anyone who does this is going to encounter similar problems. For us, one of these issues was a metaphor. So in classic NER systems, it's really relatively straightforward to say that John is a doctor is a relatively easy thing to annotate, because John is a person and a doctor is a person, right? Uncontroversial. In literature, we have sentences like this. The young man was not really a poet, but surely he was a poet. Now, in this case here, we know that the young man is a person. We know that a poet is a person. But what do we do about a poem? A poem is being predicated of a young man, so we have to do something. Is it a person? With us, we made a decision that we're only going to annotate phrases whose type denotes that entity class. So again, saying that a poem is not a person, even in this context, it's predicated of John, or of the young man. We also have to make decisions about personification. Right, so this here is a sample from Black Beauty. As soon as I was old enough to eat grass, my mother used to go out to work in the daytime and come back in the evening. Does anybody know Black Beauty? Who is I in this case, or who's my mother?
A horse,
yes. So is a horse a person? These are the kind of decisions that we have to make when we're adapting these kind of guidelines for our specific task and not just getting the definition of a person from some external NER system. For us, we decide to include all characters who engage in dialogue or have some reported internal monologue, regardless of their human status. So in this case here, a horse is a person, a robot is a person, and an alien is a person, because they have internal cognition. So in our case here, we annotate a bunch of data, and this here gives you a sense of what kinds of phrases we see being most represented in each of these categories. In this case here, it's more of a random sample than the ones that are most frequent, but include examples like my mother or the doctor as being people, the house, the room, the garden as being facilities, the sea, the rivers, locations, London, England, the village as geopolitical entities, the ship, the car as vehicles, and the army as organizations. Okay, so given this kind of data, we have a gold standard, right? We can see now how well a system is going to perform as a function of that training domain. So what we did in this case here was take data from news text. So ACE 2005 is an example of a data set that has been annotated for these same kind of nested categories, for the same ones that we were trying to annotate, but comes from generally news data, from Newswire, broadcast news, broadcast conversation, and blogs. And we can see already that there's a very different distribution, the kinds of types that we see, right? So that literature has many more mentions of people than news does. While news has many more mentions of organizations, right? Orders of magnitude more mentions of organizations than literature. So even just seeing this difference in distribution, we know that the results are going to be very different. So to measure this, what we did was take a state-of-the-art method for identifying nested entities generally in text, and evaluate the performance difference when we alter this training and test domain. So we took a model here, the state-of-the-art model from last year, used it to train it on news text and evaluate it on news text. We have an F score here of 68.8, which again is state of the art for this particular data set. Take that same model trained on news and use it to evaluate on literature, where we know we now have a gold standard, we know what the truth is. We see the accuracy fall by 25 points. So again, we know this is going to happen because it happens every time we take a model trained on one domain and use it to evaluate another. Until you go annotate your data, you may not know how stark of a performance drop it's going to be. In our case here, it's 25 points. But if we take our model trained on literature and use it to tag literature, we see that performance go back up to the level of training natively on news and evaluating on news. So having in-domain data is really important for having the kind of performance that we expect to have for these kind of methods we want to use it for. And in fact, if we take a more contemporary model, over the past year, there's been a lot of great progress, as I mentioned, for contextualized word representations. BERT is one example of a model that does that. If we swap out our embeddings with BERT embeddings, we see a performance increase of almost 9 points, just from this one structural change alone. So the F score that we have now for identifying these nested locations in literature is now 77.8. Now, the other important thing here is that I mentioned error analysis as being one of the important things for characterizing how these kind of systems perform and what kind of biases might be injected into the system as a result of training data. To analyze the kind of errors that our systems were making, we ended up taking these two models that we trained, one for news, one for literature, and used them to tag 1,000 new literary texts from Project Gutenberg. And use those same models to analyze the difference in frequencies with which a given string is tagged as a person under both models. And what we found here was that the model trained on literature ended up recognizing the following words much more frequently than a model trained on news. The ones that had the highest frequency in terms of the difference were Mrs., Miss, Lady, and Aunt. You can see a sort of trend emerging in this case here, what literature is getting that news is not. And there's lots of good reasons for this, right? We can just look at the data to see this sort of difference in representation for men and women, that news texts often had many mentions of heads of state and men like Vladimir Putin and George Bush, while literature has a much more balanced representation of male and female characters. So to test this, we made this more formal by asking how well does each model identify entities who are men and women by labeling all of the entities in our test set for the gender of people, right? So for the gender of those entities that are labeled as persons already, and measure the recall of each of these models with respect to those entities. And what we found here was that a model trained on news ends up recognizing men with a very strong disparate impact compared to women. So the F-score for men is 49.6, while the F-score for women is 38, right? Low overall, but recognizing men much more frequently than it does women, right? True men compared to true women. Well, a model trained on literature used to evaluate, again, on this same test set, not only has a better performance overall, but also has less of a disparate impact between these two different categories we want to predict. So, in this case here, when we think about how we go about thinking through the ways in which we can take a model that's been trained from some other data set, from some other source, or the one that we want to evaluate it on, we also need to be thinking about the kind of biases that model is bringing into the kind of data and the kind of analysis you're going to be doing with it. So, even if you do this, be careful about the kind of data as well. Now, one solution for this, again, the solution that we had here was to annotate new data ourselves. And I want to give you an example here, at least, or just a quick demo of what this kind of annotation practice looks like. So this here is an example of an annotation software called BRAT, which is really common for a lot of NLP applications that involve labeling spans. And pretty much every NER application involves labeling spans of text, whether you're using flat NER or nested NER. So if you go to this link here, and I'll show you, walk you through how you can log in using this username and password here. Let's see if I can do this on here. Yay, okay, so I'm gonna log in. So this here, again, is a sample of all of the articles in the 1894 text from the journal that we've been talking about. And if we select any one of these 396 different texts, you'll pull up the content of that article here in the context of this annotation system. This is probably not big enough for people to see, but does anybody know how to make it bigger on a Windows machine?
Hold Control and roll the mouse, center mouse.
Yes, excellent. Okay. So I'm going to log in over here. So the login here is just on the upper right-hand corner. If you hover above it, you'll get that screen showing up. And if you log in here with the username Reno and the password RenoPass, you'll be able to make annotations in this text. So my French is pretty old at this point, but I think this is a person. And if we hover around, we can then have a categorization system that's brought up what kind of label we want to assign. Here I've chosen to use the classic NER categories of people, locations, organizations, and also just to demonstrate that we can choose whatever we want. We can also have labels for spans of text that denote lines or ships, right? Really any kind of category that we care about, we can include here. And in all this kind of context as well, okay, so multiple people are annotating at the same time, so you're going to have these kind of nested structures. But if you want to, you can also have nested structure here as well. We don't have any good examples. Well, I guess this would be, yeah, so the governor, civil governor of Sudan here, this would be a person, while Sudan here would be a location according to some definition that we have. Right, so again, to have the kind of representation here of what annotation looks like and how easy it can really be in the context of these kind of systems. In our case here, we built our 200,000 word data set over the period of 3 months, working very infrequently. So in this kind of system right here. So the kind of effort that we would need to have for building new data for your domain often is one that can be really paid off in terms of the accuracy of the gains that you get. So I think that's all I have. Anyway, thanks.
What is this running on? Is this
so this is the Brat software that is running on one of my servers.
Okay.
But it's software that you can run on any server or even your laptop. I should give a link to it. I'll put a link in the document, the Google Doc.
Oh, great.
I put a, there's something that looks exactly like Brat, but it's called Inception.
Oh.
And there's a hosted version of it. You can run Inception locally, or there's a hosted version that's supported by Clarin. And even if you're not a member of an EU institution, you can sign up for an account, and then you can just do all of your annotation in a kind of already hosted environment, which is what we recently moved to. And it's great, because I always forget my Brat password.
Does it just run on a simple LAMP stack? Is that what you have it on?
So in this case here, I'm not sure what the underlying architecture is.
Okay. Still leaves a question, how do you annotate pictures?
I don't know the answer to that one.
It's a mean one.
No, there have been a lot of, there is, of course, a ton of work on annotating pictures because it forms the basis for a lot of computer vision tasks for recognizing objects in images. So I know that they exist. You just need to find a computer vision person to ask.
You should talk to Thomas Smits and Melvin Waver.
Actually, Fred Harris here.
Yeah.
As well.
Lauren Tilton.
Maybe we can add these names to Google.
Yeah. I'll put it up on the visual analysis note from the beginning.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, that's about it. Thanks.
So when you're deciding what counts as a domain? How granular do you get? Do you decide based on genre? Do you do sentimental novels as its own domain? Or do you do, sounds like you do kind of a literature, broad literature.
So in our case here, we decided to annotate a bunch of different kinds of literature. So is it all published under one big data set? But I don't think there exists a genre of literature so much as a bunch of micro genres. And in fact, each individual author could be said to have their own idiolect, right? That is a distinctive of their own. But again, I think one of the ways in which having a gold standard is important is that it lets you quantify the kind of performance you get from training a model on one domain and working across lots of different ones. So if we see in this case that a model trained on everything works well for some authors and not others, then we know to invest more in more annotations for those authors, or to qualify the kind of statements we make about work that's derivative from them.
So if we were to build an annotated set and then train our data, would you recommend doing it specific to this journal or more broadly to periodicals from that time period? And because what would also be of use, because one of the main focuses of the NEH is that we're building something of use to others,
mm-hmm.
What would be, you know, if we built it just using the journal, would that be of use to anyone beyond us?
I think it's a strategic decision you have to make. I mean, I think the most relevant, most useful to you in carrying out your work would seem to be to annotate specifically just for the journal.
Yeah.
but you would bench it against itself. You take one portion of 1 year, build the gold standard around that, and then
yeah.
apply it to the rest of the set.
Yeah, I mean, you want to do like some kind of stratification, so you're getting
okay.
some data from every year, ideally. But in that case, you're presuming you're not going to be using it to train on that journal and tag other ones.
Right.
Right. That the limit of your own scope is just that.